He dragged out of bed scandalously late, but feeling much more charitable all around. The coffee some sensible person had hot and waiting for him in the kitchen didn't hurt either. Miles sipped slowly, ticking through a long list of really smart people he knew, and wandered out to survey the sitting room. The hole in the wall had been enlarged to the dimensions of a small doorway. Bright light was pouring through, and Gregor's cat was occupying Miles's preferred spot at the end of the sofa, where the late morning sun, the real one, could bake the ache out of your bones. Miles crossed to the new addition, coffee in hand, and found Captain Avalos on his knees on the ornate rug, sorting papers and making notes on his comp pad. "My lord," he said, looking up and starting to stand. "Stay there," Miles said, waving him down. "You've been busy." "Not me." Avalos sat back on his haunches. "I made some calls and got a document historian up from the university. He took care of these for you." He extended a sheet of paper, and, taking it, Miles found the very letter he had first opened. It had been coated in some transparent, protective laminate that still managed to transmit the texture of paper to the fingertips. "Did he read anything?" Miles asked. Avalos looked scandalized. "No, my lord. They're Emperor Dorca's private letters." "Exactly," said Miles. "I thought it should be left to you," Avalos said, "in case there's anything that ought to be classified." "Yeah," Miles agreed. "Though, if there's anything we still need to be worrying about, I frankly don't want to know about it. But first things first. Who was he writing to?" "Oh, I did see that," Avalos said, sheepish. He exchanged sheets with Miles and pointed to the top. "I didn't realize for a while, because they just say Kate." "Ah!" Miles traced the letters with a fingertip. Dorca had a firm but educated hand. "Empress Catherine Sophia Vorbara, née Voratyr."
"Emperor Yuri's mother," Avalos said.
"Yep," Miles agreed. "And Pierre Le Sanguinaire's sister, which would make her my..." He paused to count on his fingers. "Great, great, great aunt."
"She died young, right?"
Avalos asked. "Childbirth," Miles said, then paused, suddenly less sure of that. "At least, I think so. And she wasn't that young. Well, I mean, she was, by our standards, but she was older than him, a right old maid. Which makes sense. Who else would dare try it, with Le Sanguinaire for her brother? Dorca remarried a few years later, and had Prince Zav, and then the girls." Avalos nodded. "This is very strange, my lord," he said slowly.
"How so?"
"Well, it's mostly that." Avalos pointed, and in the better lights, Miles belatedly noticed the door that should let out into the corridor. But it didn't. He knew there was only blank wall on the other side. He walked over and knelt, touching fingertips to the smaller swinging door set within it, down at ground level. It was the sort of little door that some people had to accommodate their pets, and also the sort of door that other people had in order to safely slide trays of food to a prisoner.
"All right, that's a little creepy," Miles said.
"It's bricked up," Avalos reported. "Neither door will open, but if you get down on the floor with a hand light, you can see underneath."
"I'll take your word for it," Miles said, standing creakily.
He brooded over the door for a minute, then made another circuit of the room, looking at things again in the better light. The rug was beautiful autumn colors, clearly hand-woven. The colors on the bed echoed it in more muted shades, and the headboard was carved like flowing water. Two doors stood newly opened on its far side. One led to a primitive fresher facility,
and the other to a lady's dressing room. Between them were heavy blackout curtains, and behind those a redundant set of closed wooden shutters. Miles tugged experimentally at the catches, but they were stuck fast. He inspected the dressing room more carefully, fingering the soft fabrics and bending to touch the embroidered slippers. No evening gowns, no riding clothes, and no jewels fit for an empress. Though that last might not be so strange, the accumulated Vorbara jewels were kept in one of the vaults, except for a few historically valuable pieces on display at Varhartung Castle. There had been no one to wear them since Princess Corinne died, and there wouldn't be until there was another Vorbara princess. Until they had a daughter. Miles swallowed and went to sit down on the rug by Avalos. "Let's have a look, then," he said, and reached for the first letter. "My lady, the rain stopped late last night. I walked in the garden this morning as the sun came up, and felt warm for the first time since the New Year bonfire, when I drank enough champagne to see the fireworks twice over, and you let me dance with you on the terrace nearly until dawn. It smells like rain this morning, and wet earth. I hope it lingers on these first blooming flowers I've picked for your breakfast tray. Also, and, you'll be gratified to know, you were right about Lord Vordavin. He came to me late last night, very proud for a man come to go down on his knees and plead. It must have been a hellish trip, making it across the eastern Vordavin border on foot, not sure which men were loyal to his father and which might be wavering, and always with the chance of being run through once he got to my territory. Though, no, that isn't right, for it is all mine, every inch of it, including those inches under Count Vordavin's foot right this moment. Lord Vordavin has come to believe that, where his father, I think, never will. It will be over by this summer, I'm sure now. I'll come for dinner tonight, if it pleases you, and tell you what he said. I'm riding north for the day, to inspect Four Patrol's lines. 10,000 swords strong, and fresh for the spring campaign. Still, I have your voice in my ear constantly these days. You can win by the sword, sire, you said to me, but you can't live by it. I think you're right about that, too. Yours, Dorka Vorbara." Miles passed it on to the avidly curious Avalos. "Vordavin was the last holdout," he said. "Every other count had bent the knee to Dorka by the time he was 22, but Vordavin refused for another 6 months, the fool. Most of that was winter, and Dorka brought him in line the following spring with the help of Lord Vordavin, at the cost of, well, I don't rightly think they kept a very good count of how many it was." "I didn't know he was so young." Avalos set the letter carefully aside. "There are a lot of these," he said, and offered a bouquet of little paper strips, clasped at one end by what looked like a hairpin. Miles flicked through them. More of Dorka's handwriting, except now in short, disconnected sentences. "How are you tonight?" And, "I talked to Vorburg." And, "I did. He sends his regards." "It's a conversation," Miles said slowly. "Or half a conversation, anyway." "But why, though?" Avalos asked. "If you wanted to talk to someone in here, all you'd have to do is sit on the floor and open the pass-through door." "Yes." Miles chewed his lip. "Let's see what else we have." There were a lot of letters, and every last one was in Dorka's hand. Hundreds, by conservative estimate. Miles went through them slowly, sticking to the order the historian had preserved from the drawer. Some letters were elaborate, descriptive narratives of Dorka's travels across Bariar as he shored up his newly won imperial authority, or rode the streets of Vorbar Sultana to Vorhartung Castle, or walked the halls of his own home. Others were intricate political projections on a planetary scale. Dorca's vision spanned decades. The securing of his holdings, the reinvigoration of the land so that not every man need work to the bone to feed himself, and beyond into a better future. He had no idea what was coming, what the arrival of galactic civilization and then the Cetagandan invasion would do, to say nothing of his own son. Some of the letters were light to the point of whimsy, recounting amusing anecdotes from the day. They were all, to a greater or lesser degree, love letters. "Kate, I can't sleep tonight. I hope the rest that eludes me has found you. I know you're tired. God, Kate, what I wouldn't give to..." "No, I promised I wouldn't say that, and I think you're wise, as usual. Never pull the blade out until you're ready to bleed. Every soldier knows that. I am home from campaign, perhaps for good. The test of ruling well. I would never have thought that I would retire from soldiering, just as you were forced to take it up. That's what it is, after all, but on an entirely different plane. But you fight for Bariar, just as much as I ever have. I know many things to tell young soldiers, but none of them will help you. I don't know how many boys I've told to keep their feet dry, for the love of God, or they'd lose their toes before coming within 100 miles of the enemy lines. But your feet are clean and warm. I would say dainty feet, as a man ought to his lady wife. But you laugh at my excesses as it is. But I will say it anyway, and damn your laughter. Which is also what I was thinking when I sent the baba to you. Dainty feet, and delicate ankles too. So there. I am not ready to bleed. Sleep well, my lady. Yours, Dorca Varbara. Avalos left at one point, and came back with sandwiches and more coffee. Miles read and sorted and thought, until the early afternoon, when the alarm on Avalos's chrono sounded, and it was time to go dress for Count Vorswassen's wedding. "This is the 5th, right?" Miles called from the dressing room.
6th, I think," Gregor said, appearing in the doorway. "And they keep getting younger. It's appalling. I wanted to pat the last one on the head and send her home for early curfew."
"Please tell me we got a really passive-aggressive wedding gift," Miles said. "Like one of those horrid virginity pins all the girls wear in their first season out."
Gregor made a face. "Alice picked something out, so I suspect not."
"Oh, that reminds me." Miles tugged his collar straight and brushed past Gregor. "I need to make a quick errand downstairs. I'll meet you at the car." Lady Alice's office was much quieter with the wedding madness behind them. And these days, it was just as likely to be Delia Galeni at the neatly arranged desk, as Lady Alice took some well-deserved time for herself and let her protégé assume more responsibility. It was Delia who stood and curtsied to Miles's knock.
"My lord," she said demurely, just as if he hadn't used to try to put bugs in her hair when they were children.
"I want to have a party," Miles said.
Delia looked dubious.
"Really?"
"Really."
Miles came and perched on a chair so Delia would sit down. "I don't actually mind most parties, you know, so long as I like who's coming. Gregor's the one you have to hogtie."
"I haven't tried that idea yet," Delia said judiciously.
"What sort of party? An afternoon tea or dinner?"
"Dinner. Not a ball. I want to be able to talk to a lot of different people, is the thing."
"So no dancing?" Delia took rapid notes with a silvery stylus. "We can keep everyone at the table for a while, then adjourn to a few separate conversation parlors. It's getting too chilly for the terrace, unfortunately. Guest list?"
"Here's a start," Miles said, and provided the list of 4 dozen names he had generated throughout the day, essentially off the top of his head. "I'm going to keep adding to it, though."
Delia glanced down at it, eyebrows going up. "This is an intriguing mix," she said. "Lord Vorlein, Vice Admiral Vedachev, the Dean of the University. Who is Mr. Billy Who Counts the Counts Geese? I don't know a lot of these names, actually."
"An accountant," Miles said cheerfully. "Forensic accountant. He can smell nasty bookkeeping 3 miles off. I met him on a case a few years ago."
"You're holding a salon," Delia said, slowly beginning to smile. "Inviting friends and unknowns to mix up and see what happens."
"I suppose I am,"
Miles said, and pushed to his feet.
"Let me know when you schedule it. The sooner the better. And feel free to bring some of your friends. Yours and Dove's, I mean."
"I'll get started right away," Delia said.
"Some of these people might be off-planet," Miles realized. "I didn't really check."
"They'll come back," Delia said confidently. Miles blinked.
"Oh," he said, stupidly. "Because at an invitation from him, yes, they would, now."
"Thanks. Actually, since you're here," Delia said, and produced a book of fabric samples from nowhere.
"Sorry, gotta go. Gregor's waiting,"
Miles said, and backed hastily out. They went straight from the wedding reception to Vorkosigan House. The first thing Miles did, after hugging his mother, was abandon his stiff jacket on the library sofa. "Please tell me the girl was of age," the Count said, pouring wine for them both.
"I certainly wouldn't swear to it."
Miles flopped down on the sofa and thought longingly of taking his boots off, too.
"How did you two get out of that?"
"I," the Count said smugly, "am retired. And my health is fragile, you know."
He grinned over the rim of his glass, hale and hearty.
"Speaking of," the Countess came and sat beside Miles, "we'll be heading down to the lake house soon."
"Not for the whole winter?" Miles asked, startled.
"Probably not. At least, not unless we get the heating system redone again in the next few months." She grinned like a schoolgirl. "But if we just happen to get snowed in down there, well, what could we do?"
"Are you taking notes?" Miles asked Gregor.
"We should try that next time you want to take a vacation. Divert a few weather satellites, a bit of unexpected snowfall, maybe a titch of ice."
"Actually, we were thinking you two should take a week and come down," the Countess said.
"Ah."
Miles set his glass on the table after only a sip. All he really wanted was water, for a couple of days at least.
"The house misses you," the Countess said, her eyes keen on his face.
Beside him, Gregor moved restively.
"And I miss the house," Miles said. He stared at the light refracting in the bell of his wine glass.
"It's just, maybe..."
"Maybe not this winter," Gregor said smoothly. "Perhaps in the spring." "When the muffle of snow was gone, and the mountains were exploding into bloom, and it would be nothing like last winter."
"Of course," the Countess said warmly. "Whenever you like. Ah, Zealots, thank you. We'll be up in just a moment. Come eat, and tell me how my grandson is doing."
For still being microscopic, the embryo could take up an impressive volume of conversation. Gregor was more talkative on the subject than Miles had ever seen him. Apparently the Countess had been sharing child development books with him. For about the 1,000th time in his life, Miles could have gotten down on his knees and thanked his mother for just being herself, for easing Gregor through the psychological morass so kindly. Poor Gregor, who wanted children with a deep, oceanic longing, but who still lived with his genetic legacy like a man in a haunted house. They talked about it only once,
the day after they'd gotten home from the honeymoon. There was no room for delay, they both knew that, and so no sense in thrashing out options and wanting time they didn't have. But still, Miles had asked, "You do want this, yes? Forgetting the inheritance and the politics, you do want children." "I want your children," Gregor had said, and they had set a date. They moved back down to the library for dessert and coffee. Miles claimed the spot closest to the fire, while Gregor and the Countess converged on the comm console on the other end of the room for an exhaustive discussion of brain development. "So?" the Count prompted quietly. "How's married life, then?" "It's strange," Miles said frankly. "We were planning this for years, but apparently I never actually adjusted my expectations off what every Vorkosigan has done before. Even when Grandam married Princess Olivia, he brought her home. Here." "You're not entirely unprecedented, though," the Count said unexpectedly. "In a way, you're following your mother's footsteps when it comes to making a marriage." Miles sat back, startled. "What a terrifying thought," he said honestly. It wasn't that the Countess blazed new trails through the jungle of Barryarn society. Instead, she strolled off cliffs and danced in midair, flying on the magic of never looking down. Miles had watched her all his life, and he still didn't have the trick of it. "Da?" Miles said slowly. "I have a question."
"Hmm?"
the Count prompted. "About Mad Emperor Yuri," Miles said, and checked his father's expression. Startled, but more curious than anything.
"Go on," the Count said.
"I heard a rumor once," Miles said, "about him, that he was illegitimate."
"Oh, yes," the Count nodded. "There was a rumor, that's true enough, though I can't speak to its veracity."
"I just assumed it was a tactic," Miles said, "to discredit him during the war."
"It worked that way, yes," the Count agreed. "But I don't think it was invented then. I think some of Izar's cronies were stirring up old sediment."
"Do you know where it came from originally?" The Count pursed his lips.
"Well, I imagine there were many stories, but the one I always heard was that he was fathered by Pierre Le Sanguinaire."
"Eh," Miles said, working that one out.
"Thus capitalizing on the strong resemblance to his mother," the Count said. "But you can't be worried about this. Even if it were true, it would be no threat to your children."
"Oh, I know," Miles said. "It's just, I was thinking, and what you said about Le Sanguinaire makes sense. Discredit him, sure, but wouldn't a story like that also cast the blame for Yuri's madness somewhere other than the Vorbara line?"
"Shifting blame to the Veratiers, yes," the Count said, and flickered a glance over Miles's shoulder. "Who do you blame, then?"
Gregor spoke right behind him, and Miles jumped.
"Oh, hell." "Me?"
The Count opened both hands, innocuous.
"I wasn't there for most of it." "But you have an opinion," Gregor said evenly. "Tell me, what do you think?"
The Count set his glass down with care. "I don't think most madness is inherited like eye color," he said deliberately. "I think we all have the capacity for it, to a greater or lesser degree. And what matters is where the fault lines crack, when you lay the pressure on. I think Yuri was captured and tortured at least once, fighting in the occupation. I think some of his later methods looked remarkably familiar. I think he was always paranoid, always not quite able to understand other human beings. But I do not think he was born a killer." He considered Gregor. "Is that what you wanted to know?"
there was a subtle shift in the air pressure behind Miles.
Yes, Gregor said evenly. Thank you, sir.
He set his hand on Miles's shoulder. Miles was already uncrossing his legs and reaching for his jacket in response to the subliminal cue.
We should be going. And you, milady,
Gregor added, and bent over the Countess's hand in the formal way.
A pleasure, as always. When will you be going?
Next week, probably. The Countess hugged him in that spontaneous way of hers, and Gregor took it with shy gratification, like he always did. The Count shook both their hands, clapped Miles on the back, and wished them a good night. They crossed the entrance hall arm in arm, and Gregor paused when Miles did, patient as Miles let his eyes dwell on the black and white tile, the curving stair, the hall deeper into the darkened house. It was Colonel Vortala, not Gregor, who hurried him along with a gentle clearing of the throat. Miles rocked into motion again, shivering at the first gust of unexpected cold autumn wind. He stepped to block Gregor from it. Gregor caught him at it, and didn't laugh at the ridiculousness of someone Miles's size trying that, but simply nodded his thanks. Leaving home to go home, Miles thought as they pulled down the drive. Gregor wanted to go down and visit the uterine replicator when they got in, which Miles would have anticipated if he'd been thinking at all. "I'll join you," he said. "Just want to get something upstairs." The lights were still burning in what some thriller holovid portion of Miles's brain insisted on calling the secret room. Gregor's cat was stretched out on the rug, doing that magic trick where he expanded to twice his normal standing length. Miles gave him a wide berth and went to retrieve a stack of letters, packed carefully back into the drawer. His hand was shaking again, in place of the patchy numbness he'd been experiencing for the past few days. For months, Miles had dutifully tracked every lingering trace of the poison, noted each wave of numbness or tingling or weakness in his left leg. He'd stopped eventually, when it became clear none of his doctors could do anything more, and he wasn't getting any better. Gregor had pulled up a chair to the viewer over the replicator when Miles arrived downstairs. One of the silent guards moved to retrieve a seat for Miles, too, but he waved it off and went to lean on Gregor's shoulder. Brooding, he assessed, but not alarmingly so.
These would be the mysterious letters?
Gregor asked, glancing over at him. Miles nodded and handed him one. Gregor read it, eyebrows steadily rising.
Goodness, he said, startled.
Seems you come by your epistolary tendencies naturally, Miles said. Gregor turned faintly pink, pleased.
I've gone through his papers, you know, he said, and this might be the most intimate record we have.
That's what I thought. Miles handed him the whole stack he brought, and waited while Gregor worked rapidly through them, well-trained speed reader, pausing here and there to tap a fingertip on the page in thought. "Thing is," Miles said when he was done, "I think he locked her up in that room. Have you looked?"
"Quickly, this morning." Gregor frowned down at the letters. "He writes as if they're separated."
"But she was right there," Miles said. "At least it looks that way."
"This was the final spring of the reclaiming of the Counts," Gregor said slowly. Yuri was born that midsummer day.
So she was pregnant, Miles said. Gregor, why would a man lock up his pregnant wife and then write her love letters?
For protection, Gregor said, not looking up. For the sake of his child, and to judge by these, for the sake of what he felt for her, he could have been driven to extremities.
Yes. Miles leaned into him deliberately until Gregor looked at him again.
But so that he himself could never see her?
Gregor lifted an empty hand, baffled. I was hoping you knew something I didn't, Miles said, disappointed.
No. Gregor's eyes returned to the viewer. I don't know much about her at all, come to think of it. Just her lineage, the date of her marriage. There are some pictures, you know. And her death at midsummer, in childbirth.
It just doesn't make sense, Miles said. I mean, if it wasn't his child, he might have been punishing her. But then the letters don't match up.
He was not a particularly forgiving man, Gregor said. Do you know how many executions he ordered? How many he presided over?
Miles didn't, but Gregor clearly had a precise count.
All right, Miles said, spinning theories. Say Le Sanguinaire raped her, or someone else, for that matter. If anyone knew, she would be dishonored, and he needed to secure himself with an heir. And if he loved her...
But confining her might well have been the source of the rumor in the first place,
Gregor said. Yeah, Miles sighed, and looked into the viewer like a crystal ball. Hello, he thought to his son. I'm your Da. We can't wait to meet you. Sorry about the Imperium and everything. We'll do our best, I swear it.
This is bothering you, Gregor said. Dorca and Catherine.
I don't know why, Miles said, but it really is.
There might not be anything left to find, Gregor cautioned, unnecessarily.
I know, but I was thinking I might see what's in the vaults. You said you had his things.
He paused.
The vaults held all still-sealed Imperial papers, which in actuality was most of them. If that's all right. One of your granddads was a monster, you know. But I think the other three grandparents make it up pretty well, so don't you worry.
Yes, Gregor said. No, I have no secrets, not from you.
Okay, Miles said. Thank you. He rested his hand at the back of Gregor's neck, squeezed gently, ran his thumb up the line of vertebrae, then across the faint bristle at his hairline. Gregor turned and rested his head in the crook of Miles's arm, looking up at him with soft eyes, happy with the curve of Miles' thin arm. He'd clearly forgotten about the audience of guards, an uncharacteristic lapse in such a private person. Come on, Miles said quietly. You're tired. They rode the lift up in comfortable silence. Gregor turned left from the entryway of the apartment, while Miles went right into the sitting room to return the letters. He pulled up short, gaped, and hastily set the letters on a side table.
Gregor! Your cat is eating a mouse on a 300-year-old rug!
Negri looked up from his prize and gave Miles a hostile, yellow stare. Miles approached cautiously, crouching a bit with his hands out. Negri watched him, waiting for the moment when Miles was just a hair too far away to grab him, and then leapt. With the mouse, naturally. Miles swore and dove for the door to cut off escape. Negri changed direction midair, landed on the sofa, and then shot toward the balcony door, which was, damn it, ajar. Miles flanked him from the right, feinted forward enough to divert the cat from the balcony and into the forest of handy chair legs to hide in. He pulled the door shut as he slid by, snatched a cushion off the sofa, vaulted over the footstool, broke right, and whisked the cushion a millimeter over the impudently pricked black ears. Negri recoiled, dropped the mouse, and streaked out the door between Gregor's feet. Miles crouched there, panting.
Congratulations, Gregor said into the sudden silence. You have outsmarted the cat at last.
Thanks for the backup,
Miles said, scowling at him.
And what did you mean, at last?
I was spectating supportively. Miles glanced down at the rug. "I'll let the steward know we've got mice again," he said on a sigh. "It's amazing to me how we're secure from Cetagand and microbes, but not rodents."
"I don't think so, actually," Miles said, leaning closer. "It's a mouse, but..."
He poked it gingerly with a fingertip.
"Definitely not recently deceased."
"Ugh, don't tell me he's stockpiled them from the last time,"
Gregor asked, sounding appalled at something the cat had done for the first time in 4 years.
No, Miles said. "A bit longer than that."
He gestured demonstratively at the secret room, still unsightly and gaping.
"Try a century. It's actually mummified."
Gregor made a horrified face, his secret squeamishness showing.
"I'll go close Negri in the bedroom, then, shall I?"
"The study, you mean?"
Miles called after him. He sighed, shook his head, and went to dispose of the thing. There were 100-year-old mouse guts on the rug. He was about to spend the night fighting with the damn cat for the warm spot against Gregor's back, and he couldn't stop grinning.
"Domestic life suits me,"
he informed Gregor, coming to bed a few minutes later.
"I'm glad," Gregor said, "because sleeping next to you every night suits me. So much, Miles."
"Yeah, that too."
Miles had wondered how it would be, sharing a bed with someone night after night. He'd never done it more than a few weeks at a stretch before. Now he knew, and he had to worry what it would be like to sleep alone when they traveled apart. "Gregor," he said quietly. Gregor glanced up. Miles looked at him steadily, comprehensively, from the faint touch of silver at his temples to his bare shoulders, to the notch in his collarbone where Miles left marks sometimes, just to watch Gregor finger them under his collar all the next day. Under his eyes, Gregor flushed hotly, as if at an intimate touch. He shuffled across the bed, clearly aiming to slide under the arm Miles was using to prop himself. Miles led him, then bent close, pressing Gregor flat to the pillows. Gregor's breath rushed against his cheek, and Miles hummed, riding his own surging response. He turned his head, and Gregor craned up for it. Their lips were millimeters apart when Miles gently murmured, "Cat." Gregor froze.
"Shall I go put him in the study, then?"
"Yes, please,"
Miles said sweetly, and led him up.
"But Gregor, hurry back."
The comm console woke him an hour before dawn, to judge by the chrono. Miles rolled out of bed and into his discarded clothes before waking up enough to wonder if he really ought to answer a call that must be for Gregor, who was still stirring groggily. But General Allegre, on the other end, only blinked once and adjusted his greeting to an apologetic, "Sorry to wake you, Prince." "Problem?" Miles asked, dropping onto the chair.
"There's been an incident," Allegre said. "Unexpected and explosive decompression at the Motoget construction site."
"Casualties?" Miles asked, coming fully alert. Motoget would eventually be a fully-fledged space station outpost, in ecliptic orbit a few light minutes out from Bariar. The last time Miles had seen the holos, it was nothing but a whole lot of money and a spiderweb of girders.
"Unclear. There are several extensive drills, and everyone has emergency suits, but they're still counting heads."
Allegre paused.
"We did just rotate work crews a month ago. The new bunch is one of the mixed Kamaran cohorts."
"Oh," Miles said on a sigh. "Of course it is. I don't suppose it was a freak accident?"
"Also unclear. And the new cruiser prototype docked there just 3 days ago." Allegra made an unhappy face, then acknowledged Gregor over Miles's shoulder. "We'll be down in a few minutes," Gregor said. "Thank you, General." Miles swiveled in the chair as Gregor switched on a lamp. "Have there been any intelligence blips lately?" he asked. "No." Gregor ducked into the closet to dress. "Nothing unusual on the Kamaran front, and nothing at all about Motigat." He reappeared briefly in the doorway. "You should come sit in on my regular morning briefings," he said.
"I will," Miles agreed, pleased.
He chewed briefly at his lip. "It's not a test. I just need to know."
"Only someone's going to have to go out there."
"Probably," Gregor said.
Unless there's someone else you'd rather..."
"There is rarely anyone else I'd rather," Gregor said, smiling. "And you are perfectly suited to this problem. So yes, of course. It's yours if you want it."
"I think I do, thanks," Miles said. "I'll go pack." It actually was a freak accident, as it turned out. One of those million-to-one chances that, as Miles pointed out to Allegra, did actually come around every millionth time. He spent a week and a half out at the site, confirming it from 9 separate directions, soothing the frazzled nerves of the station commander, and making tentative friends with a handful of industrious young Kamaran officers. Sleeping alone was unpleasant. He set off short, daily reports. Gregor responded with a few helpful suggestions and reams of baby hollows. In Miles' absence, his son had clearly developed the neural groove and somites that would shortly be his spinal cord and vertebrae. A nice showing, all around. He came home in the late afternoon, just in time to throw a party. Avalo split off from him to deal with a backlog at his comm console, and Miles stuck his head into his office to find it smelling strongly of paint, but nearly habitable. The desk had arrived, a wedding gift from Gregor, and Miles ran curious fingers over its satiny finish.
"Almost ready to hang out my shingle," he said to Avalos as he went back out.
"Oh, good God," he added at the aide's blank look. "Those rural schools really are as bad as you keep saying, aren't they?"
Gregor's door was open, and he was alone. Miles breezed past all 3 secretaries and swung the door shut.
"Ah,"
Gregor said, dropping his stylus. Miles circled the desk, planted one knee up on Gregor's chair, and kissed him soundly. Gregor was breathless and flatteringly starry-eyed by the time he was done.
"Here you go,"
Miles said, dropping the final report into his hand.
"Thank you," Gregor said, as quickly disposing of it on his desk.
He leaned in, and Miles kissed him again, obligingly, cradling Gregor's jaw and tilting his mouth just where he wanted it. Gregor murmured softly into the kiss, eagerly pliant.
"Miss me?"
Miles asked, breaking off. Gregor's lips parted on something heartfelt, but they closed quickly at a knock. Miles stepped back, then hitched himself up on the corner of Gregor's desk. Lady Alice bustled in at Gregor's summons, carrying an ominous stack of place cards.
"Well-timed, Miles," she said briskly. "Your guests will be arriving in less than 2 hours, and we still haven't settled the seating issues."
"I can shuffle those for you, if you like," Miles said helpfully. "Make things more lively."
She gave him one of her more freezing looks, opening her mouth.
"Look, I really don't care," Miles said. "Honestly, I either like everyone on that list or want to know them, so I leave it to your talent and discretion."
Beside him, Gregor quivered in silent amusement at this blatant handling.
"Is Lord Auditor Verhovis still coming?"
"Yes," Alice subsided for the moment. "Where would you like to receive him?"
"Upstairs. That is, if our sitting room is presentable."
"In your absence,"
Yes, Lady Alice said crisply. He'll be here in an hour.
I should go get dressed then, Miles said, and escaped.